And now, since I have minutes to fill, but not enough of those minutes for another interview, here's an essay I wrote about a road trip I took with my husband. A version of this appeared in the New York Times Magazine. Last summer, Charlie and I headed west on a summer driving trip. Our first stop was just a couple of hours away, a gas station parking lot in Oak Hill, West Virginia, where Hank Williams was found dead in his Cadillac convertible on New Year's Day in 1953. As we wound into Oak Hill, it occurred to me that every small town in West Virginia sits wedged between mountains, making driving through them something you choose to do rather than something that just happens. Once you do take the trouble to visit, however, it's my experience that small-town West Virginians are generally glad to see you. If you need something, all you have to do is ask. So Charlie and I pulled into a convenience store to buy sodas and fried pies and do just that. Could you tell us, please, at which gas station Hank Williams was found dead? The counter clerk didn't know, which surprised me. After all, if you Google Oak Hill Hank Williams, you get a lot of hits. She asked a man who'd come in to buy cigarettes, but he wasn't sure either. A conversation developed. Finally, a woman came in who did know. Down the street, she said, just across from the church. She walked outside with us to point out the right direction. Used to be Burdett's Pure Oil, she said. You can't miss it. There's nothing there now. Nothing at all. Musically speaking, I was raised on classical and educated on rock and roll. Then in my 30s, someone gave me an Emmy Lou Harris album, and I began listening to more country music. At the time, I was doing a lot of driving on America's highways in a pickup with a camper, so songs about heartache, not enough money, and rolling down the road seemed somehow more real. Bourbon, small-town fried chicken, and Emmy Lou's music kept me more cheerful than I had any right to be during those creative, chaotic, self-destructive years. Back then, I was also still a bit of a snob, toting around a snob's attendant limitations. Hank Williams' music was too raw, too hazy to have meaning. He sang completely in his head and through his nose. His songs were too simplistic, too plonka-plonka in their production. It was only after I had had a lot of the pretentiousness knocked out of me by my own struggles that I came to understand all this was beside the point. Hank Williams didn't write songs for hillbillies. He wrote songs for anybody interested in facing life with a modicum of openness and honesty. Charlie and I drove down the street. There was indeed nothing left of Burdett's Pure Oil, except a concrete slab with a couple of grease spots, a few sprouting wires, and some building scraps. I had seen pictures of Burdett's on the internet, and it looked to have been built in the 30s. Two gas pumps, peaked blue roof, small double bay garage, outside restrooms, a soda machine. That's what it must have been like almost 60 years ago when a college student named Charles Carr pulled in driving Hank Williams' Cadillac. The 29-year-old singer slumped in the back seat, dead of too much alcohol, too many drugs, not enough peace. He probably died sometime earlier, somewhere on the road. No one is quite sure where, not that it matters. To me, there is no romance in such a death, and not much in the life that leads to it. I get to say this because I, too, once flirted seriously with self-destruction. After close to 2 decades of sensibility, however, I'm open to all things being possible, even after death. So, at Burdett's Pure Oil, I said a quick howdy to old Hank, and a quick thanks for the songs, and then I offered him a cross-dimensional high five. For me, as for him, life is a road trip. We'd both been on the road through Oak Hill, West Virginia. Yet for some reason, I got to keep going.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is whining. I'm so lonesome I could cry.